Hello, I'm Jason Young, the general manager at WCBN-FM Ann Arbor. My job is to help keep things running at the station. However, there are many more important people involved in helping to define WCBN as a university and community mainstay. Today, I'm joined by Jerry Mack, a local blues aficionado. Jerry can be found DJing the Nothing But the Blues show on WCBN every Saturday, and when he's not on the air, he can be located on the guitar and doing vocals for his band, The Terraplanes.
At one point, we heard that there was going to be a benefit for John Sinclair, who had been incarcerated for marijuana possession and sort of made a spectacle of by the law enforcement people because of his political views and his activities in Detroit, Ann Arbor area. And so it had a lot of student support, and I believe it was announced possibly on WCBN that tickets were going to go on sale. Originally, I was born in Saginaw, Michigan, okay. as the song goes. I share that birthright with Stevie Wonder and probably some other expatriates who live around Ann Arbor, who've moved here. And I came here in 1970 to attend the University of Michigan. And I actually came down here for a seminar for the engineering school in the summer of 1969. And during that time, I happened to stumble across the first Ann Arbor Blues Festival that was happening out on Fuller Road behind U of M Hospital. I didn't know it was happening then, but I was out that way and saw this large group of people crossing Fuller Road going to this music festival. So I kind of followed them, stood outside for a while and listened to some blues. I didn't have enough money to get in, and that was sort of my first initiation to the Ann Arbor music scene here. So that was fruitful. I don't remember much of it, but I remember that it was a very cool experience that night.
And so then, have you always been involved with music?
I haven't. No, not as far as my education goes. I've always liked music. I didn't begin playing an instrument until I was 18, until I was down here. I learned guitar from a couple people in the dorm who had guitars, and they let me borrow them, and I started playing on them because I had always wanted a guitar, and I was just too busy trying to make money to go to U of M. So once I got here, though, it was a little bit of a culture shock from Saginaw, so I sort of got absorbed into it a little differently.
Okay. And so then, what was your first introduction to radio? Just generally, whether it be listening in the car or...
That would be AM radio in Saginaw, Michigan. Mm-hmm. We had, I think, at least three stations we listened to. And probably riding around with my older brothers in the family car, and they would be listening to the radio. Going out, once in a while my parents would force them to take me with them, much to their chagrin and dismay. But that was sort of my orientation of listening to radio in the late 50s in Saginaw. And we had some fairly progressive stations that played a lot of rock and roll then, and some R&B, and some doo-wop, but mostly rock and roll, stuff that was popular in the 50s. Some of the radio stations there were WKNX and WTAC, which was out of Flint, and there was another one in Saginaw, but I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, I sort of went in and out of listening to radio, but as in my high school years, I listened to it more because my parents bought me a little transistor radio. And I worked at the Saginaw Country Club in the summertime, and in the pro shop there out back where they took care of the golf clubs and the golf carts, they always had the radio on, always listening to the AM radio because that was all that was available in the mid-60s. So I listened to all the DJs and the top 40 hits that they played, which was quite a variety of stuff that, as I look back on it, I heard a lot of great sounds, including a ton of Motown stuff. And let's see, that's sort of... That was in Saginaw, and when I got to Ann Arbor, there was FM radio out of Detroit, WRAF and WABX, and I believe a fledgling FM radio station in Ann Arbor, WNRZ, and they sort of played mostly progressive rock, which was the music to be, that was main sort of the cultural mainstream of the time. But in the dorm, I was also turned on to WCBN, which I found I could only get in the dorm, and that some of the students in Mosier Jordan, where I was at, listened to WCBN. And I remember sitting around some nights, dorm rooms, talking and smoking, as a lot of people did back then. And I remember particularly listening to some Little Richard on the radio, who I'd known of, but not heard much of his music from my previous radio experience. And I remember hearing a couple of his tunes I had not heard before, and it just really sort of grabbed me, the fact that this music was happening, even though it was like over 10 years old, it was still, people were still listening to it, it was still being played, and it still had a place, it seemed, in the culture, in that, because the counterculture, the hippie people at the time in the dorm, the students were sort of historically inclined to listen to older music. It wasn't just about the now music. I mean, they listened to everything that was new, but the older stuff sort of filtered into it, and I kind of saw how it was relevant. And also earlier, when I was listening to radio in Saginaw, I noticed that a lot of the popular music had this sort of pattern to it. And I later discovered in my musical education that the pattern was actually the blues progression that early rock and roll was based on, the 1-4-5 progression, where there's a call and response and then a turnaround. And I sort of knew about that, but it really came into perspective listening to it again here in Ann Arbor. I sort of was in a space that I was allowed to, my awareness was allowed to expand, so to speak. And a lot of things about music came into perspective at that point. And that's what I also began to realize, how the blues was sort of a root of music, that it came from this sound that I was familiar, but I didn't know anything about it. So it led me on an exploratory sort of journey there. And I learned guitar, like I said, from some people in the dorm, and I learned a lot of the folk stuff at the time, Bob Dylan stuff, Beatles stuff, Rolling Stone stuff, Neil Young, and that. And I realized that some of the music it went back to the blues. So
I want to actually take it back a little bit. You said you started at the university in what year?
1970.
Okay, so I know you began at WCBN a couple years later on, right?
Not till 1977.
Okay, so in the 70s, I know there was a lot of political activity, but one big thing that I've heard of in the early 70s, I believe it was 1971. I know there was a big concert to sort of free John Sinclair.
Right.
Do you have any recollection of that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was a sophomore at the time, and I was also an usher for a concert series that was in Ann Arbor. I think it was UAC and Daystar was the name of the organization. It was through the university that brought a lot of concerts to Hill and Chrysler Arena. So I signed up to be an usher so I could see these shows for free. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing a lot of great music at Hill Auditorium in 1970 and 71. In 1970, when I was still in the dorm, there was a concert of B.B. King and Howlin' Wolf, and I somehow got in to see that, and that was my first real big show of seeing blues artists. And I didn't know quite what to expect, but I knew it was important that I be there, and I just absorb what was ever happening. And in 1971, I was again part of this series as being an usher, so I saw a lot of shows there. I saw a lot of rock shows. They also had Ike and Tina Turner play. And at one point, we heard that there was going to be a benefit for John Sinclair, who had been incarcerated for marijuana possession and sort of made a spectacle of by the law enforcement people because of his political views and his activities in Detroit, Ann Arbor area. And so it had a lot of student support, and I believe it was announced possibly on WCBN that tickets were going to go on sale at a certain day at a certain time. So we made sure we were up early to get there and be in line. So I think I bought like 10 tickets and used all my money. But I knew that I had friends who would want them, so I didn't lose anything on it. So I had my ticket to get into that show. And I attended it, and I think it was December 10th, 1971.
Yeah, it was that December, yeah.
Right. And it started, I believe, at 7 o'clock in the evening, and there were a variety of speakers. I think at first there were some speakers, political speakers, some of activists, people from the Chicago 7, some of the Black Panthers, people who had been politically suppressed or antagonized in the course of the late 60s, who were out of jail. So they were there to support John Sinclair because they felt that he was unjustly incarcerated, as a lot of people did. And they spoke for a while, and you know, everybody's kind of antsy because they heard that John Lennon was going to be there, but we didn't know who all the other guests were, and they kept bringing out all these people that we were just knocked out by. Stevie Wonder came and did a set.
Wow.
Bob Seger was there. Commander Cody in the Lost Planet Airmen did a set. I believe Phil Oakes was there. A folk guitarist. I'm trying to think. I think Archie Shepp, jazz musician, some other jazz people. Local band, The Up. They were kind of an offshoot of the White Panther rock and roll music scene. And let's see. I'm trying to think of some other people who were there. Anyway, it was a long evening. I do have an audio recording of it somewhere that is on cassette. And I think I also might have a video disc that someone gave me over the years. I have to find where it is. But I know I had a cassette audio recording of a lot of this. So I'll have to try and see if I can find that. I had thought that WCBN had archival access to that. But it may have been lost or something. I don't know. But I know somewhere around town there exists recordings of this show. And it went on and on. I think John Lennon and Yoko Ono finally came out at like 2 in the morning. And we had already been there for 7 hours. And I guess it was worth waiting for. He only played for 15 minutes, if that. She did a song. A poetry kind of in vocal inflection type tune, and then John sang. He sang "Working Class Hero" and the song he'd written for John Sinclair, "10 for 2," and he may have done another tune also, And that was it. He did his songs, and he waved to the crowd, power to the people, and they were gone. And that was the end of the show. Yeah, it was quite an experience. I went to a lot of music concerts and during that period, so I saw a lot of music. And I wish I would have even gone to more because as I found out over the years, especially with the blues people, the people that I didn't go and see when I should have, passed away. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going, I miss that. But that's another story.
Well, I do want to ask you about the college stations in general, because while WCBN was also patched into the dorms, weren't there a couple other stations on campus? Or was that later on?
I believe that was later on. Okay. I know that WNRZ was an AM station that had become FM, and they were trying to be fairly progressive, not like the Detroit stations, but play even more diverse kinds of genres of music. And it sort of reminded me of what was happening on WCBN, because WCBN at that point was playing a lot of stuff that you didn't hear commercially. Bluegrass, folk, country, blues, rhythm and blues, and earlier rock and roll, and it's some experimental music, but not so much of that. It was more like music that sort of had more down to earth sort of themes to it.
Fast forwarding to 77. How did you decide to get involved with WCBN?
I had friends that I had known from the dorm that I saw, not really hung out with, but I saw them from time to time around Ann Arbor. And one lady friend who I knew, we were talking one night, and she said, you really have a good speaking voice, My boyfriend is the program director at WCBN, and they're looking for student and non-student DJs to fill in over the summer for broadcasting. She said, you should contact him. So she gave me his name. It was Charlie White, who was the program director, I believe in 1976 and 1977. And Charlie was a very knowledgeable music guy. He just seemed to be like a natural for what he did at the station here. He was very much into music, very much into getting people involved in music, helping people out, and he had a set of rules, but he was very easy to get along with and very forthright, very open about how he saw things and how he wanted people to project their what they did for WCBN. So I was only, I don't really think I had much of an interview, but I sort of had the reference from his girlfriend and mutual friends that I was interested in music, that I had been interested in music, and that I had a radio voice that would be complimentary to CBN.
And so you mentioned an interview. Was it, I guess, what was the process to get on the air at that time?
It was to sit down with the program director and talk about your musical interests, and also to be prepared to take a third-class radio operator's test, which was provided by the FCC, which was required to have broadcast time on any FM radio station at the time.
Okay. So one of the kind of distinctions in what you just told me, at least in comparison to what I've heard from a lot of the other people, is that so WCBN was patched into the dorms up until a certain period, but then it sounds like there was an FM, a transition to FM.
Right.
When do you know when that was?
I believe it was in 1972.
Okay, so, right, while you were
72 or 73 was when we became FM broadband, or FM, a full-fledged FM frequency that we transmitted from the tower that I believe was, I think it was originally on top of South Quad. Tom Bray would know more about this.
Okay.
He worked, he's as an electric, he was went to school here as an electrical engineer and was very involved in the technical aspect of WCBN at the time. And he would have a lot of that knowledge. So I was advised by Charlie to seek out the instruction booklet on how to take a third-class radio operator's test, which was provided by the student bookstore here, the university cellar, and found out that they gave tests, the FCC gave tests in Detroit periodically for people who wanted to obtain a broadcast license. So I studied the booklet, and I believe I took the test in May of 1977, and I had to wait a few weeks before I actually got the license. And then my first radio show is at 3 a.m. on July 5th, 1977.
Okay, wow.
Which was the evening after the 4th of July. So sort of, I just decided I was going to be up all night.
Mm-hmm. Kind of, at least historically, seems like it was a part of, like, drugs were just a very big part of the culture in the 70s, maybe some of the 80s. But was that, a big part of WCBN, and did it kind of influence the way in which people engage with the music on the air, like what they decided to play and things like that?
Quite possibly. Not everybody at the radio station, was involved in drug taking. There were some people who were certainly, not taking them. They were, back then they were called straight people versus, people who were either stoned or aware people. And there was all kinds of those influences, but there probably was a lot of influence from, marijuana. People who smoke marijuana could have affected how they perceived music and how they wanted to present it. I'm sure some psychedelic drugs were also in circulation in the town and culture and in the times, because it was the 70s. So I'm sure those had an effect on certain people's perception of music and what they brought into the radio station. And, of course, alcohol was there also. And I think as the decade changed from one to the next, the 80s still brought in alcohol. And I think there were possibly some harder drugs that were influenced people at the radio station, but I don't have any direct knowledge of that. It just seems it was out in the culture. It was in the bars. It was at parties. You knew of people who did it. Sometimes you did it with friends, but I don't really think that WCBN was sort of a haven or a focal point of it. I believe that the combination of people who are interested in music and how possibly drugs at the time influenced their perception of it was a factor, but it wasn't a magnet or anything down here. It was just that the people who did it would have done it anyway, and they just happened to be interested in music. So if they did it and did a radio show, I think there were probably some radio shows that seemed to be pretty out there, either musically or the DJ was. But I'm sure that the effects of that did have an effect on how WCBN was the style of music or the particular choice that a DJ would bring into the station or play at the station. I wouldn't say it was prevalent all the time, but it did happen.
Gotcha. And okay.
But there was always a rule that the FM studio is off limits to anybody smoking cigarettes or anything because of the, especially cigarettes, because of the toxic nature of the smoke. We didn't want it to affect the equipment or have any effect on the record albums, which were, you know, porous cardboard. And most of the DJs were pretty good about that. You know, once in a while you would smell something going on. Alcohol was probably more of a problem that lasted into the 80s, but eventually that went away also because that was causing problems. And it was also looked down on by, of course, the university did not condone it, and to have it in their buildings was not something they wanted to do. And I think they also started wanting to clean it up in the dorms around that time in the mid-80s also. So WCBN immediately had a ban on any alcohol. You know, you're not to bring any alcohol in the station. And you weren't supposed to be under the influence either. I think that didn't come up till later, possibly in the 90s, but that was also, a restriction that, you know, you were supposed to focus on radio and whatever you were at that point, that's how you presented yourself on the radio show and the music.
Okay. So, are you familiar with Ken Friedman? He was the general manager, I think back in the early 80s.
Yeah, I believe he was the general manager in 81.
Okay, and now he's the general manager at WFMU in New Jersey.
Right.
He helped kind of mark one of WCBN's more well-known political moments in 1980 when when Ronald Reagan was elected. He decided to, at least as the story goes, lock himself in the studio for about 6 hours or so and play It's My Party, I'll Cry If I Want To on repeat for that duration.
Right. I think, I'm not sure if it was for that long, and I think it may have been suggested by him. He may have initially started it, but I think other DJs sort of, came in and followed his lead because they, you know, thought it was a political statement that needed to be said at the time. So, yeah, that did happen.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any recordings of it. It's possible that someone out there does. If you contacted them, they might may or may not know that if those exist. CBN had some conflicts, like some people. I don't know if it was their own stability or the influence of drugs, but there were people who had unusual behavior here at the station. A girl, I think, had some emotional issues, did actually barricade herself into the FM studio. And I think Tom and Floyd, who are the engineers at the time, had to figure out some way to get her off the air. So we had to sort of disconnect the broadcasting signal for a while and reroute it until we could get her out of the studio.
Wow. Okay. Well, I did want to ask if there were any other, early kind of political moments that come to mind, or just really kind of like interesting social things in regard to WCBN. In the 70s and 80s?
Well, WCBN has always been a champion of local musicians and their performances. And for several years, we hosted before we had our on-air fundraisers, we had sort of music concert fundraisers where we were allowed to rent out the Union Ballroom and put on music shows there. And they were always local bands who played there. and WCBN would use those proceeds to help fund itself, even though we were part of the university budget back then. And those were some very, very interesting shows. They were pretty well attended and very, you know, very exuberant shows. And I think those happened in the late 70s and into the 80s. And then I think the union sort of, it did happen quite a bit through the 80s, but I think by the time the late 80s it stopped. Sue Dice would know more about that. I attended a lot of those, but I don't remember the exact dates that they came and went to, but I do know they've started in the late 70s and continued to at least the mid-80s. And they almost always featured local bands. So WCBN had a good relationship with local musicians during that time. You know, we were supportive of each other. And to some extent, we still are today, as we still have a local music show that I believe Jason hosts, and or other people host also.
Jason and Shelley.
Yeah, Jason and Shelley. And that is a connection with the community that is important, that is continued from those earlier times when we hosted shows. And we still sponsor some music shows, but not so much local anymore, it seems. We bring in different avant-garde styles from that are touring or whatever. So that's sort of the departure I've seen. But as far as the recordings that exist of local musicians, you know, I try to play as many as I can on my blues show that I know of. So
there were other radio stations on campus up until, I want to say, about the early to mid-90s, I believe. And one of the stations was WJJX. And there was an incident in 1987 where, I guess, a DJ during one of their programs had a couple callers call in and make a few racist jokes on the air. And the host pretty much kind of laughed and added to those jokes. And there was kind of a controversy around that. Do you know if WCBN kind of faced any backlash in regard to that?
I believe WJJX was the was named after. Well, WCBN used to be in the 70s. It was WCBN as the FM station, and then RCN was the AM feed that went into the dorms. Still, they allowed that. And it was out of here and the residential college, I believe. We had broadcasting from there. And then I believe JJX was formed as the AM part of WCBN that was broadcast out of Prod C. And that went on until for a while. And, yeah, that incident did exist. And I believe there was also another incident. It may have happened here in the FM station, but I'm not clear on that. But I do remember that there was something about controversy about that happening at WJJX, and there was some repercussions on that. The DJs were, you know, removed. So, and we had some sort of seminars about, you know, racial issues and what was appropriate to discuss on the air or to play on the air, and but certainly to discuss on the air. And it was pretty much the majority consensus of the DJs that anything racist or was not to be tolerated. And to some degree, the sexism also, although a lot of music has, you know, more sexism themes in it. But both of those have sort of I don't know if I would say that they've, at least the sexism hasn't gone away as much as the racism, because it's, I think that was definitely a hotter issue at the time, and you know, still is. The sexism though is also, it's in a lot of music, you know, more so than racism, I think, but that is still needs to be interpreted by the DJ who's broadcasting that. I know in my own particular genre of the blues, the blues is very sexist and sometimes, and I had complaints at times, sometimes, about certain songs I'd play, so I would try to put it in perspective as much as I could. Unfortunately, I had to just say that, you know, this is the theme of the blues, of some people singing the blues, and I can't not say that that's not going to happen, but I will put it in perspective as I play it.
I'm assuming that for the greater part of the 70s up through the 80s, the bulk of the music was through vinyl pressings. So a lot of records, and then maybe the late 80s, 90s was cassette tapes, and then getting into the 2000s with CDs, if I'm not mistaken?
No, CDs, as CDs began to be produced in the late 80s.
Please, okay.
Yeah, we started acquiring a section of CDs. Before that, yes, it was mostly vinyl. We did have a cassette library. Down the hall there, we had annexes that were filled with tons of vinyl and cassettes for many years that just got accumulated. We did have some music directors who would just get promos from record companies, and they were not well organized in their music reviews, so a lot of them would just get shuffled into Annex A, and it was just jammed full of vinyl that nobody knew. It wasn't categorized or anything. So I believe in the early 2000s we had sort of we were told that we had to give up that room for office space, so we had to go through and do a cleansing of what vinyl we were going to keep and what we were going to get rid of.
So then at one point the station was much bigger than it is now?
Physically, yes. Yes. The two rooms down the hall that are now offices were Annex A or Annex and B-Nex, we call them.
Okay.
Or Annex A, Annex B. So.
Well, I guess then moving into the 90s very quickly, I think there was, there's kind of, again, I'm kind of speaking from historical readings at this point, but there sounds as if there was a sort of like a radio kind of like came back to the forefront a bit in regard to like alternative culture and things like that. Was there a shift in WCBN possibly in the 90s, maybe? Like a kind of like a resurgence almost?
No, I don't really remember. It's kind of been, I mean, as far as students' interest or...
Yeah.
I think for a little while there was, because, TVs and videos were big, so radio provided sort of an alternative entertainment form to that. And I think that the music at the time, because it had become, music becomes sort of exponential as time goes on, more diverse genres. You know, hip-hop and rap became more popular in the 90s, and along with international music, I think that was when we started featuring Sundays as mostly international music, you know, and started to expand into world music, you know, featuring that exclusively on Sundays. And I think that was an important way to reach out to radio listeners. I know personally of some of people that who are regular listeners to WCBN because it provides those shows on Sundays. They're multicultural shows that they wouldn't hear anywhere else. I mean, on a radio station, local radio station.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a huge asset of WCBN to be able to provide that.
How have you seen, if at all, the kind of like the people that are attracted to WCBN changing, or how do they stay the same?
I think that the change comes up because of the musical styles that have come into play. Like, you know, like I said, there's more, from when I started, you know, there's a whole host of musical genres that have developed and sort of evolved in their own right, including electronic music, which as a musician and as a student of traditional, you know, music, I had a little, you know, difficult time with. And I realize that it has its place in music. Sometimes I think it gets a little bit carried away as far as people's interest in it. Like, you know, enough is enough. But that's, again, my opinion, because I'm a little bit more of a traditionalist as far as music goes. And the fact that I'm a musician, for me, music comes from the human heartbeat and the human functions, you know. Electronic music comes from a machine, or machine rhythms, machine sounds, and that has a place as far as creating sounds, but it should never replace what human beings can do, because I believe music is a spiritual vibration that cannot be achieved by a machine, or it cannot be replaced by a machine. So, but again, all the styles that we have, and I believe that the fact that we accommodate all these genres and is what is attractive to certain DJs, and it keeps WCBN vibrant. But it's also the fact that we are non-commercial, that we don't have to, you know, play something that is like really horrible, although sometimes we do anyway. It's not a staple, or it's not the programming. It's the creative process that the DJ themselves goes through and learns from and evolves with, by learning old music and learning about new music. And I admit that I am not as aware of as much new music as I should be. And when I hear some shows that people do, and I hear new music that's really refreshing, that, you know, is maybe a combination of electronic music, or it may be electronic music, it may be, you know, music created by humans, it's refreshing, you know, to find, I am learning again at my age. They're teaching me, because I'm not aware of it, because I don't, you know, I can't spend all my time finding out about new music. So I rely on WCBN and the students and the people here who explore that, have the opportunity to explore that, either through the time or the fact that they are younger and it's part of their culture. So I think, again, that ability to explore and expand your musical horizons and be creative with how you present it is what WCBN, that's sort of a constant, but that constant is about change.
So then I actually want to follow up on something you mentioned with a question from David Talbot, who's one of the other people, a current student who I've been able to interview. And he was curious to know, like, how do you see your role now as a community member? I think beforehand you were a student and then an alumni member, but having lived in Ann Arbor for quite a while now, you're You've kind of taken on the role of community member in the station. And what does that mean to you in terms of how you engage with the students and the university, I guess?
Well, the fact that I do work for a university facility, you know, that means that I, and it's an educational institution, the fact that I want to provide sort of an educational basis to, along with an entertaining factor to my show, that I, there's a story behind the music, and there's a story of the people who make that music that not everybody is aware of, or it's, or have heard a little about it but don't know. So I try to bring my knowledge of what exists into that, and to present that. And I would like to be able to, I'd like to think that students are out there listening to my show and listen and learning from it, but I have a feeling that my show is listened to more by community members, because for some reason music like the blues is a little bit alien to most students, because they didn't grow up with music that it was directly produced from. It's like a, you know, at least a generation where it's sort of evolved from that. Like, you know, the earliest rock and roll almost directly came out of the blues. You know, 75% of the music of early rock and roll is blues. And then there's a little country, a little gospel, a little jazz, but it's mostly blues. So by the 60s and 70s, that became a whole another style of music. And even though some of those people did embrace the blues, it began to get sort of really diluted. And that continued into the 80s and 90s and to today. But shows like Nothing But the Blues, and it was started by a DJ here at the time, Joe Taboni, that has endured. And my presence is sort of assured that it's going to continue along as long as I'm part of the radio station and that I'm alive. So I want to try to maintain my good graces with the university as much as possible, so that they see that the blues show is not just to make money, but it's to educate people about the experience of what the blues was and it still is. Because there's still people creating new blues music, and I find that some of the new blues is influenced by hip hop and stuff, which is very interesting. And I sort of welcome that sort of fusion of it, because I realize it's part of how music evolves, is different types kind of blend together. And there's always going to be traditional blues, but there's this new style that's evolving out of it. And I would like to hope that students would see that and get more involved in it. But I put out feelers for people to come down and learn about the blues, and I don't get much response. And I'm not sure if it's because of my presentation or they're just not interested. Yeah, I spoke spoke more about it with R. Wolf, because I'd heard him speak at the last mass meeting about this mentoring thing. And then he referred me to Robert Lee, who is also part of it. So I spoke briefly with Robert and said, I'm really interested in you know, mentoring individual or small groups of students who want to learn about the blues or are interested in the blues, because I feel it's important to, you know, to pass it along, to be able to get it so that students come into the station and would choose wanting to do a blues show more often, because they want to learn about the blues and they see where its place is in music. So I try to, you know, explain or say, you know, that where blues is in the music realm of things, but I'm not sure that, you know, people are getting it or I'm explaining it properly, which would probably be worked out if I actually had the opportunity to speak with a group of students. I know there's a professor here, Bruce Conforth, who teaches a blues class, and I had conferred with him a few times about 5-10 years ago, sat in on a couple of his classes, and it was very informative. It was very academic, but he had a lot of hands-on stuff. He brought music in and had pictures of people that would show, and there was no textbooks or anything, but he mostly talked about it and had records and stuff and showed it. And I sat in a couple classes, and he referred to me a couple of times. And there was sort of a good flow between some of his students who got interested in WCBN and CBN students who took his blues class. And I'm not sure, I haven't spoken with him lately, I'm not sure where that's at. It's sort of my own lack of keeping up with that, which might possibly create more of a connection to have students involved. But I sort of am waiting to hear something from Robert about any mentoring classes or how that develops. Because I'm afraid that, when I'm gone, that the blues show may languish. Of course, it may not, but that's sort of one of my fears, and it may be justified or not. But I would like to sort of see more student participation in it. I mean, I do get people who sub my show, but a couple of times they didn't play blues, and I was kind of surprised at that. Because all you have to do is go to the blues library and start pulling out albums, and that's how you learn. Just like, in any library, on any subject.
I do want to also ask, so you are a musician. You are part of Jerry Mac and the Terraplanes.
Yes.
Am I saying that correctly? Okay.
Yes.
And so how has working at WCBN kind of influenced your own musical career, if you will, or vice versa?
Well, other than having a regular access to listening to blues music, and in the past I've had the opportunity to interview some great blues people, either down here at clubs, just by using sort of my credentials that I do a blues show here, that's been very. I don't want to say it's been beneficial as far as my knowledge and my growth in the music, and I've had great opportunities to meet lots of wonderful people, and those are experiences that I would have not had in any commercial position as a DJ. And it's part of what WCBN and the Ann Arbor community has provided that I was able to tap into, or, was presented to me, so I worked with it. When promoters of shows that played at clubs would say, "Do you want to interview this guy?" I would say, "Sure, bring him down." And I got to meet some important historical figures that way that, like I said, I would not have had that opportunity.
Any names come to mind?
Yeah, plenty. My first blues person I interviewed was Coco Taylor from Chicago, who's Chicago's Queen of the Blues. And I interviewed Lonnie Brooks, also from Chicago. Eddie Clearwater, also a Chicago guitarist. I got to speak with Willie Dixon. He didn't come down the station, but I spoke with him at Rick's for almost a half hour, and that was a tremendous experience for me. As well as there was a couple other people who did promotions in Ann Arbor through Rick's Cafe, Prison Productions, Lee Berry, and Eric Cole, who was a DJ on Nothing But the Blues for a while. Lee would bring people down for me to interview, and there was another gentleman who worked out of the Blind Pig, Dave Faber, who brought down some very interesting people. He brought down Blind John Davis, who began his musical career in the 30s and played on some records that I have on that I play on my Monday show, Yazoo City Calling. I was able to interview him in 1984, and that was a great experience meeting and talking with him. And also another gentleman, Albert Lou Andrew, whose name was Sunnyland Slim, another blues pianist from Chicago. And he was great. We talked about Chicago blues. We talked about his being in a band with Sonny Boy Williamson and where the origins of some of his songs came from. And just stories like that are just, you know, just incredibly, you know, unique. And it's an opportunity that I was able to share with my listeners. And I did record some of them, but I'm not sure where some of them are. But I didn't record all of them, to my dismay. And I really wish I would have. I was told, well, they're on WCBN's archives. They can be, you know, brought out about with that. But it's something else I need to pursue, is discovering or trying to find out if I can do that. Because we were told from the beginning that everything that was broadcast was recorded on a very slow-moving tape somewhere in, I think, originally in WUOM's studio. And then I think it was transferred somewhere else, or digitalized at one point. But yeah, some of those people that I got to meet and interview, it's just, it's amazing. And I'm glad to have had that opportunity. I'll think up a few more names here as time goes on, but those are the ones that come to mind.
I'm curious to know where you see WCBN going from here. I guess, what's the future of WCBN here at the university?
Well, I would hope that the university sees WCBN as R. Wolf's term, as an experiential experiment that provides education and entertainment for people. And in an experiential way is that it will allow students to learn about music that they normally wouldn't learn about through, you know, iPods or whatever is, you know, music is presented to them. And that that the university will realize that and continue to have WCBN as that entity that allows this sort of hands-on education and entertainment and fun to happen for its students. And to be a voice in that also connects with the community, that you know, provides you know, public service for people, or for the community. We used to have a lot more public service shows on WCBN, and I wish some of those would come back. And I think it's a link that the university should maintain with the community, that it doesn't become sort of this completely separate entity, because it's become so big, and to some people some seemingly aloof from the everyday needs of the Ann Arbor community, of which it is part of, and vice versa. You know, one depends on the other. Although the university was here a few years before Ann Arbor was. So I would hope that the university as I said, keep WCBN for its own reasons, as far as allowing students to become hands-on educated with musical experience, as far as DJs and learning about it, and also to be a connection with the community.
So what has WCBN meant to you in your time here?
Well, I would think it's hard to say in just a few sentences, but it's meant what I've been talking about for this cast is that it's been an experience for me that has allowed me to discover, you know, old music and new music, and to become involved in it, so that I also have become the vehicle which provides old music and new music, and at the same time continue to learn myself. And as also I mentioned, it's provided a very fruitful experience for me as far as being in touch with local music, and being in touch with music from around the world, and being in touch with people in the Ann Arbor community who are from different countries who listen to WCBN because we provide that music. In my business, I have clients that I discovered listen to WCBN because their culture's music is played on Sundays. And to me, that's very endearing that WCBN provides that. It's that link. So it also allows me to be part of a radio station that does that, and to work with it, to continue to say this is what we're here for, and to help expand on that, to help improve it, so that more people become involved and more people have a joyful quality experience listening to us.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you for joining me today, Jerry.
Well, thank you, Jason. I appreciate it. I hope I've shed some light on the history of WCBN. I'm not the only person who, like I said, who has this knowledge. There's a couple other people that I think that are important to add their knowledge to it, and some of it may conflict because we're trying to remember back a ways. So. But it's important that we, you know, all of it come out and is shared with people.
This podcast was recorded and produced in the WCBN studios in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library.